නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So venerable brothers, Dhamma friends, so we were discussing Bahudhatuka Sutta, which is available in the Majjhima Nikaya, and Buddha make a very interesting comment here. යනි කානිච භික්කවේ භයානි උපජ්ජಂತಿ සබ්බානි තානි බාලතෝ උපජ්ජಂತಿ නො පඬිතතෝ. So whatever the fears arise, so those may arise because of the fools, not because of the wise man, not because of a good person. Similarly, in case if there is any trouble arise, it happens because of a fool but not because of a wise man. Again, if there are any calamities happen, that also can happen because of fools but not because of a wise man. So basically, by giving such teaching, Buddha advised the monks, Pandita bhavissama vimansakati evang hivo bhikkave sikkitabba. So Buddha invites the monks, okay, you should be wise people, you should be inquirers. So that should be how you need to restrain yourself. And after Buddha makes this comment, Venerable Ananda makes the interesting question, how kittavatanuko bhante pandito bhikkhu vimansakoti alang vachanayati. So how, Venerable Sir, that one would say that he is a wise person, that he is an inquirer. So what is the criteria? What are the skills? What are the qualifications? At that occasion, Buddha gave a four components, four areas: dhatu kusaloch hoti, ayatana kusaloch hoti, paticca samuppada kusaloch hoti, thana thana kusaloch hoti. One should be skilled in the elements, one should be skilled in the bases, one should be skilled in the dependent origination, and again one should be skilled in possible and what is impossible. One has to have a kind of an idea about that. So we were discussing the elements and we have spent fair amount of time on that. Basically, different definitions were given about the elements. There are 18 types of element, and again there are 6 types of elements, and then again another 6 types of elements, and maybe 3 types of elements. So likewise, Buddha went on to explain about the elements at many different ways. Because Venerable Ananda keeps on asking, is there any other way that the skill of the elements are possible? At that occasion, actually, Buddha went on to explain different categories of elements. But the idea is not that we merely have to have kind of a theoretical understanding about these definitions or these explanations. Rather, we need to practically experience them. That's the most important thing. Say, for example, if we are talking about 6 elements, say Patavi Dhatu, Apo Dhatu, Tejo Dhatu, Ayo Dhatu, Akasa Dhatu, Vinyana Dhatu, so we can simply remember them, we can understand their qualities merely superficially, theoretically. But that is not the important thing. What is more important is to realize them, to experience them properly, thoroughly, understand their true nature or their behavior. So that's why certain meditation techniques like Dhatu Manasikara, elements meditation, or when we are recognizing various feelings, so Vedana Anupassana, and again when we know different thoughts, Chitta Anupassana, so all that actually help us to understand the elements. So elements are not limited to the physical side, they are even broadly available at the feeling side and again at the mental side. Even different types of thoughts Buddha mentioned as elements. For example, Kama Dhatu, Nekkama Dhatu, Vyapada Dhatu, Abhyapada Dhatu, Vihinsa Dhatu, Avihinsa Dhatu. So those are actually the different categories of thoughts happen in human mind. So those are also considered as different elements. So basically that doesn't belong to anyone. There is no owner and there is no anyone influencing. But when ignorantly a person is actually behaving, he actually generates certain amount of karmic potential. But otherwise, there is no any kind of a person or self or soul involved. So there may be reasons, there may be causes conditioning this process. Accordingly, different types of thoughts are arising. Other than that, there is no any person or being or any soul involved in the situation. Thoughts can happen, there is no thinker. Seeing can happen, but there is no seer. Hearing can happen, but there is no listener. So likewise, we are going to some deeper aspects. So how a kind of a process happen without a participation of an agent, without a participation of a person. So basically, this whole teaching emphasizes this impersonal, non-self continuation or the manifestation of various different kinds of processes. But we conventionally we call it as a human being, an animal, a deva, a brahma, etc. But actually, that is a mere convention. Now, at last we discuss about two types of dhatu, that is sankata dhatu and asankata dhatu, where Buddha explained about the conditioned phenomena and again the unconditioned. Conditioned phenomena are, we can say, five aggregates. So that is all conditioned phenomena. Asankata dhatu is what we call as the nibbana. So last week we discussed different names used for nibbana and what are the methods used to attain nibbana. So that's also briefly we have discussed. And for example, so there are certain suttas like Asankata Sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, Asankata Samyutta. So there Buddha explained like this: Bhikkhus, I will teach you the unconditioned and the path leading to the unconditioned. So that means he is going to explain about the Nibbana, the Asankata Dhatu. And what Bhikkhus is the unconditioned? The destruction of lust, the destruction of hatred, the destruction of delusion. This is called the unconditioned. So rather than we having kind of an aim to achieve kind of a place or a kind of a phenomena as Nibbana, so it's a kind of a dynamic process that one may go through the practice. As a result of that, we are getting closer to Nibbana by eradicating defilements. That's another way that we can look at it. As a result of our practice, we should verify whether there is a declination of certain defilements, a certain reduction of the defilements. I was practicing, say, several years. Now, do I have a reduction in lust? Do I have a reduction in the hatred, delusion? How my mind is progressed, developed? So likewise, we can verify whether the path is working on us by knowing what are the kind of defilements available right now. So in order to recognize that also, we need certain kind of a guideline from the Buddha. So he's telling, okay, these are the wholesome qualities, these are the unwholesome qualities. So then we can recognize whether the unwholesome qualities are reduced, wholesome qualities have improved. So likewise also, we can have a kind of an assessment about what we are doing. And different paths, then Buddha explained to achieve this. And what bhikkhus is the path leading to the unconditioned. So he went on to explain several paths like mindfulness directed to the body, and then samatha and vipassana, serenity and insight, concentration, different categories of concentrations like concentration with thought and examination, concentration without thought, only with examination. So likewise, different categories of collecting the mind. And then the sunyata nimitta appanihita, the emptiness, signless, and the undirected concentrations. So those are also another path. The then four establishment of mindfulness, four satipatthana. And then the four right strivings, different sammappadhana, having proper effort. And then the iddipada, four bases of spiritual power. Then spiritual faculties, indriya, five powers, bala, seven factors of enlightenment, satta bojjhanga, noble eightfold path, ariyo attangiko maggo. So likewise, different areas are there summarized in certain suttas, actually all leading to this goal, reducing the defilements in a way, reducing lust, hatred, delusion, so we might get closer to this what we call the Nibbana, the unconditioned. And then I'll conclude it with few verses taken from some other places. So certain nuns actually have summarized this, and they exclaim, telling that they were able to understand the dhatu, the elements. Dhatuyo dukkato disva, ma jating punaragami, bhave chandang virajetva, upasanta charissa siti. So one venerable called Sumana Theri, so she is mentioning, so she has understood these elements in a little difficult way. She has gone through some difficulties, but anyway she was able to understand these elements. And having understood that, he was able to stop this rebirth. Bhave chandang virajetta. As a result of this whole process, she was able to abandon the desire towards the existence. Upasanta charissati. So she was able to calm down, to become peaceful, to become more sublime, because she understood the operation through the elements. And then another Theri Gata, Vijaya Theri Gata. Bhikkhuning upasankamma sakkacchang paripucchahang same dhamman desesi dhatu ayatananicha. So I went to one arahant bhikkhuni, and she explained me about dhatu and ayatana, the elements and the bases. So the idea is that typically we are very much like trapped in the conventions. So once we are born, we are introduced to this conventional world. So we recognize, okay, this is my mother, this is my father, this is my toys, this is my house, this is my college, this is my friends. So likewise, we are introduced to this conventional terms and the terminology and the world. So ultimately, it becomes the truth. Then for us, there is a person, there is an individual, I am here, I am so and so, I am so important, I am better than you, or I am inferior than you, you are so and so. So likewise, we are more into this conventional realm, more we abide by that, more we get trapped. So for us, that conventional reality become more realistic, more truth. But later, when we are introduced to the Dhamma, so there Buddha explains, okay, there are five aggregates, there are elements, there are six bases. But now we are unable to let go of this conventional realm. So that's why it might take time, because we were engrossed with this conventional terminology for long, long time. So we might not be able to immediately let go of that convention. We are unable to penetrate it. So for us, it has become the norm, it has become the truth, it has become the reality. So to penetrate it, to look through it, would be very difficult. Because for a long time we accepted, okay, there is a person, there is my mother, there is my father, there is my child, there is my house, there is my president or whoever. So likewise, so all these have become some individuals, some important objects through our senses. So this is how we are operating with the outside world. But penetratively, if one is understanding these elements or the six sense bases, etc., then one has another perspective. So rather than looking at from that conventional, typical angle, so one is able to look at from a different angle. What is really available? What one is really experiencing? So rather than simply conditioned by this conventional explanations, how one would be able to be mindful, have a concentrated mind, a calm mind, relaxed mind, and then have a different perspective. So what is going on right now? So what this body is experiencing? So now we are looking things objectively. Rather than subjectively, now we are trying to look at things objectively. So how things are operating from a different manner. Now another kusala, another skill that Buddha introduced is the ayatana kusala. So after explaining the dhatu kusala, that means the skillful in the dhatu, in the elements, now Venerable Ananda asked the next question. Kittavatapana bhante ayatana kusalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. Venerable sir, how one can say that a bhikkhu is called skilled in the basis? Now Buddha went on to explain about the sense basis. Chakho panimang ananda ajjattikani bahirani ajjattika bahirani ayatanani. So there are 6 categories of internal and external bases. So what are they? Chakkuncheva rupacha. The eye and forms. Sothancha saddacha. The ear and sounds. Ghanancha gandhacha. The nose and odors. Jivhacha rasacha. The tongue and flavors. Kayocha pottabbacha. The body and tangibles. Manocha dhammacha. The mind and mind objects. Imaniko ananda cha ajjattika bahirani ayatanani yato janati passati ittavatako ananda ayatana kusalo bhikkhuti alang vachanayati. So when one knows and sees these 6 internal and external bases, a bhikkhu can be called skilled in bases. Now there are many suttas actually explaining about these in detail. So I have taken certain extracts from the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, again in Majjhima Nikaya. So basically, there also Buddha give a kind of a explanation. Okay, these areas you should know. So what are they? Cha ajjattikana ayatanani veditabbani. You should know about the 6 internal bases. Cha bahirani ayatanani veditabbani. You should know the 6 external bases. Cha vinyana kaya veditabba. So 6 categories of consciousness you should know. Cha passa kaya veditabba. 6 categories of contact you should know. Attharasa manopa vichara veditabba. 18 kinds of mental explorations you should understand. Then chattinsa sattapada veditabba. 36 positions of being should be understood. So this is a kind of a title given at the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So I am not going to explain the whole thing, rather we'll take some part of it. So there also Buddha explain, okay, you should know the internal sense basis. Cha ajjattikana ayatanani veditabbani. So basically, so what are the 6 internal sense basis that we already discussed now? Internal sense basis are Chakku sota gahana jivha kaya mana. That is the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. So they are called the internal sense bases. And the external sense bases? Rupa, sadda, gandha, rasa, pottabba, dhamma. Forms or the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles and the mind objects. Now, the whole world is this. So, when we are talking our world, so we have a lot of things. So, we have complicated the whole thing. And for us, many people are there. Many world systems are also there. Many countries are there. Many continents are there. Many races are there. Many vehicles are there. Many governments are there. Many rules are there. So many, many things are there. Now for us, it's very, very complicated. It's very, very difficult for one to understand this whole system. Because now human have introduced so many things. But Buddha simplifies the whole thing and he simply says, there are 6 internal bases and there are 6 external bases. That's all. To the eye you can see, to the ears you can hear. To the nose you can smell, to the tongue you can taste, through the body you can experience or go through some contact, and through the mind one can think, thoughts, mental objects may happen. So this whole experience we can extremely simplify to these 6 internal bases and the 6 external bases. So you may be learning many things, maybe sociology, maybe politics, maybe physics, maybe chemistry, etc., etc. But anyway, everything can be included under these 6 categories. Either we are talking about the internal sense bases, or we are talking about the external bases. Sight, sound, smells, taste, tangibles, and the mind objects. So likewise, so Buddha's teaching help us to, in a way, untangle the whole thing. So we humans have tangled the thing. We have prepared many things. We have introduced so many words. We have introduced so many languages, conventions. Even almost like difficult to comprehend now, because so many things are there. But anyway, one can simplify the whole thing into 6 sense bases. And we can get on to another level, telling when I and the form or the sight comes together, we can call an I consciousness happen. As a result of their combination, I consciousness happen. So the I consciousness depend on this I and the form, I and the sight. Similarly, when ear and sound comes together, we can say the ear consciousness happen, a kind of a knowing happen, sota vinyana. Similarly, when nose and odors comes together, the nose consciousness happen, gahana vinyana. So there's a kind of a cognition takes place. So there are many different smells are there, but you can recognize, okay, this is a particular smell. This smell comes from a kind of a flower. This smell comes from a certain other place. So likewise, you can distinctly know a certain smell because of this ability. It's a kind of a function. It's a kind of an activity. The nose is the sensor in a way. The smell is the other side. And we recognize it, we cognize it. Through, we can say, the nose consciousness, gahana vinyana. Similarly, the tongue and the taste produce the tongue consciousness, so that we can recognize different tastes, flavors. Body and the tangibles produce the body consciousness. So different tangibles are there, so we can accordingly, we can know different kinds of tangibles through the body consciousness, kaya vinyana. And different thoughts and various mental objects happen in the mind, that also we can recognize, we can distinctly know using the manovinyana. So the mind and the mind objects produce the mind consciousness, manovinyana. So likewise, this is a kind of a transaction taking place. There are internal sense spaces, there are external sense spaces. Now there is a kind of a transaction. But this transaction repeats again and again. I sights, I consciousness. I sights, I consciousness. I sight, I consciousness. This happens repeatedly. So we get the notion that I is there, ear is, so the sight is there, I consciousness is also there. So altogether we now have the concept of passa, the contact. So 6 categories of contact. Chakku sampassa, that is the eye contact. Sota sampassa, ear contact. Gahana sampassa, the nose contact. Jivha sampassa, tongue contact. Kaya sampassa, the body contact. Mano sampassa, the mind contact. Now that also another area that one can know. So when a repeated process happens at the eye, we can say there is an eye contact. When there's a repeated process happen at the ear, there's an ear contact. So likewise, the contact is now available, which can produce different kinds of even mental explorations. Attharasa manopavichara. So one example given here ඉතිකෝ කිංචේතම් පටිච්චවත්ත. චක්කුණා රූපන් දිස්වා සෝමනස් සට්ඨානීයං රූපං උපවිචරිතේ, දෝමනස් සට්ඨානීයං රූපං උපවිචරිතේ, උපෙක්ඛාට්ඨානීයං රූපං උපවිචරිතේ. So basically Buddha explained, okay, when a kind of a contact happen, say eye contact happens, so there may be a certain amount of a feeling. So as a result of that contact, there is a feeling arise. So now you might be interested about that feeling. So more and more your mind get engaged with that feeling, with that experience. So continuously you are trying to get that experience. Say for example, you are looking at a beautiful picture, and as a result of that, certain amount of a delight arise in the mind. You prefer that, you like that. So more and more you want to get closer, and you take a picture, and you are enjoying that, you are seeing some subtle details of that. A certain amount of delight, certain amount of pleasure is also arising. So somanasattaniyam rupam upavicharati. So basically the idea is that rupa, that what we call the sight, is now more and more mentally engaged with. So your mind is involved with that. Your mind has engaged with that. So you are there basically. You are born to that. You have lost this independent anisita state, or the independent state of the mind. Rather, the mind has become that. You are fully engrossed with that, engaged with that. So it can happen because there is a certain amount of a delight, certain kind of a pleasure arise because of this engagement, because of this attachment. So mind tends to have a kind of an exploration there, more and more exploring there, engaged there, attachment there, engagement there. So similarly, sometimes there is a kind of a domanasa. Probably even though you attach your mind, you are experiencing certain domanasa, a little bit of a despair. But still mind do that. Still you are going through that despair, but mind continue to do that. Continuously engage with that. But the tone, feeling tone is domanasa, kind of a despair, a kind of a worry. Probably there may be an equanimous feeling. Upekkatthaniyam rupam upavicharati. Once the mind or the eye happens with this particular sight, what is produced is the eye consciousness, ultimately the contact, and that contact has produced certain equanimous feeling. But you might be engaged with that. Say for example, you are reading a book and which has some dry subject. So you are not experiencing any pleasure, you are not experiencing any despair. Rather, you are having kind of a little boring, little bit of a neutral kind of an experience. Suppose that you have to do it because your exam is now coming. Probably you have to do it. So likewise, you may be experiencing certain kind of a equanimous feeling, but you may continue to do that, engage with that. So the upekkatthaniyam rupam upavicharati. So kind of a equanimous feeling of may be produced as a result of that engagement with that particular sight. So likewise, so Buddha went on to explain about the ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. And accordingly, there are altogether 36 or rather 18 kinds of mental explorations are there. So when our eyes are in contact with the sights, so the mind get engaged with it. It is not that merely eye is participating, rather it invites the mind to get involved. So there's a mental participation now. So it is not merely eye participating, rather now the mind also get involved. Now, as a result of that, what can happen? There may be certain defilements also can happen now because of this process. Now we can get on to the Satipatthana, where Buddha invites us to look at this whole process through mindfulness. Say for example, in the Dhammanupassana section, so you have this Ayatana Pabba, And there Buddha explained, Punacha param bhikkhave bhikkhu dhammesu dhammanupassi viharati chasu ajjattika bahiresu ayatanesu. So one is contemplating mind objects as mind and abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects in terms of the six internal and external bases. So in terms of the six internal and external bases. So one has to have certain mindfulness to do this. You can't merely know the facts, know the text and do it. Rather, you need certain amount of concentration to do it. You need certain amount of mindfulness to do it. Then only you are able to guard the senses and understand this whole process. Say for example, you are practicing Anapanasati and developing certain amount of refinement in the mind. Your mind is fairly collected now, concentrated now. You have the present moment awareness. Now such mind you can keep at the eye door and see what's going on there. You can keep it at the ear door and try to understand what's going on there. Then nose door, body door, you can do like that. Anyway, in general, you can look at the mind. You can keep the mind at the mind door. So you are looking at the mind. Even though eye is seeing something, so what is happening to the mind? Is there any mental exploration? When you hear sounds, what's going on in the mind? Is there any mental exploration? Is your mind getting involved with what you hear? Similarly, when you are tasting some food, so how your mind's reaction? Is it still calm? Is it maintaining its peace? Or is it troubled? Is it agitated? Has it become greedy? Or angry even? Similarly, when the body is going through certain contact, any tangibles, what is the state of the mind? Is the mind still maintaining the peacefulness? Or the mind get agitated? Mind feel so uplifted, so involved, so engaged? Or was it able to maintain the peacefulness, the calmness? So likewise, whenever the senses are operating, so the Buddha's advice here is to look at the mind, particularly even look at the outcome. So ida bhikkhave bhikkhu chakkuncha pajanati rupecha pajanati yancha tadubhayam paticcha uppajjati sanyojanam tancha pajanati. Now say for example, you are looking at a particular picture, so beautiful, and now you feel more excited about it, more delightful about it, and you get closer, and ultimately you even touch it, and you getting closer to it, you want to get a picture. So that means the greed has arisen, a kind of a lust has arisen, a certain tanha craving has arisen. So that is the sangyojana. That's the sangyojana. That's the kama raga sangyojana, we can say. A kind of a sensual desire has arisen in the mind. But the process is where the eye and the sight is involved and the eye consciousness happen. This process has repeated, eye contact has happened. Maybe certain delight, so rather certain pleasurable feeling also has happened. But now there is a lust towards that. So you can see there's a mental participation in that. So we couldn't maintain the mind in an unattached state. Rather the mind get involved and it has become lustful. So this is something that Buddha asks us to look at. Is your mind get lustful? Is there any kind of a change in the mind? Is there any kind of fetter arisen in the mind because of this transaction? When I transact with the sight, is there any change in the mind? So similarly, if the ear have kind of a transaction with the sounds, is there any change in the mind? Is the mind get involved? Is the mind become delighted? Or mind has become agitated? Suppose someone is talking to you, and he start blaming to you. So what is happening to your mind? Is it merely sounds, and you can simply maintain your calmness? without any agitation, or whatever is being said, you feel offended and you feel upset and you feel agitated, you feel angry. So that is where the fetters have arisen. So are we able to notice that fetter? Are we able to notice that defilement? But what it caused was through this transaction, ear with the sounds. Maybe we can put the ear consciousness also. Ear sound and ear consciousness are the kind of the constituents, but mental participation, mental interpretation has produced certain defilements. Now, are we able to look at this transaction like that? It's a very interesting practice actually. So whenever you are participating any kind of a transaction between the outside world through your senses, so we need to guard the mind. We need to know the mind to see whether there are fetters arising, whether there are any kind of a defilement arising. So if there are, then we need to look at it. If we are able to establish mindfulness again, then this fetter may reduce and ultimately disappear, and we are in good shape. So therefore, Buddha further explained, yathacha uppannassa sanyojanassa pahinam hoti tancha pajanati. Now there is a certain fetter arisen, but you have noticed it. You start properly practicing mindfulness. Rather than being a victim of that whole process, you are able to step back and watch it properly. Now that particular arisen sanyojana, arisen fetter slowly fade away. And you knew that as well. You have noticed that as well. You have gone through certain argument and you had a little agitation in the mind. Your mind has become somewhat angry. But at one moment you are able to notice it. Now that anger slowly fade away. And now you understand, okay, no more anger. Again, mind is back to the normal state. Again, mind has become equanimous. Again, mind has become unagitated. So likewise, because of this, whatever the sense transaction, there could be certain fetters arising, but once we notice it, it will slowly fade away. And then yathacha pahinassa sanyojanassa ayatin anuppado hoti tancha bajanati. Now after a while, maybe we can say this, whatever the fetter hasn't come. Say, still you are talking to someone, but you are able to maintain your temper and there is no defilement, there is no mental too much involvement. You haven't get agitated. So that previous fetter didn't arise now. Or even if it arises, it has become more weaker. And you are able to recognize it at very early stage. And that fetter also has reduced and ultimately disappeared without much trouble. So likewise, more we practice like this, so these fetters become more depleted, more weakened. So there may be a transaction anyway, but no fetters, for example. So then we may reach ditte ditta mattam bhavissati. So there is merely seeing without mental involvement, without mental exploration. There is more kind of an equanimous feeling, but your mind maintains its clarity. Your mind maintains its independence without being tangled. So you can see it's a kind of a gradual practice. So we might not be able to reach this state immediately, but slowly, slowly, if one is practicing like this, so he may feel that calmness, he may be able to maintain calmness even though eyes seen the sights, even though ears can hear sounds, even though nose can feel the odors, even though the body may feel certain tangibles, even though the tongue may feel certain taste, even though mind might know the mental objects, still the mind has certain clarity, no defilements, mere transaction has happened. So likewise, our practice has to evolve towards such a direction. It is not that you are trying to completely shut you off. You are trying to close your eyes and hinder all the other senses and become completely numb. rather all the senses are operating, but you have seen them properly, their function, and even how they are arising and passing away. And this vāyatunu pādaṁ sammā cittāṁ vimuchyati. At certain places Buddha explained that one has seen how the function of this each sense organ arising and passing away. By seeing it, so he was able to abandon all the defilements. So this is a very interesting area for us to practice. And with that note, I like to conclude this āyatana kusalo hoti part. And now I like to open the session for questions.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So there is no questions from this side, Bhante, but do you have any questions from your side?
Any questions? Yeah, we have one moment.
Asai Bhante.
Yeah.
So in plain simple terms, you're saying that there is no one who exists in this room and what we are seeing here are just physical elements on the inside. The physical matter is the same as the physical matter on the outside. Mm. All the elements, there are four different kinds of physical elements. Mm. On the inside and the outside, mm. they are just the same, just interacting differently. Mm. So there is nobody here. Mm. There's no real world. Mm. These are just our own concoctions, mm. imaginations, mm. perceptions. Mm. In simple terms, you're saying this is what it is.
We can say so, but the point is it is not a kind of a dogmatic philosophical statement, mm. but one has to realize it, one has to experience it, and one has to abide by that. So that's why sometimes when Buddha himself explaining this kind of a non-self teaching, at certain time, this has happened in the Mahapunnama Sutta, you can read that also. So Buddha is giving a very interesting explanation about the five aggregates. And one monk was asking a series of questions, and Buddha gave a very deeper teachings on the aggregates. And while that was listened by the other monk, so he was thinking, so if it is so, how can there be a person, how can there be the karma when they are doing certain action? Because there is no person, no? So then who is conducting the karma? So then Buddha said, so you are surpassing my teaching. So basically, so when ignorance and the craving is involved in one's mind, so it has the potential to accumulate karma. Mm. So therefore, even though we are talking this kind of a very high teachings, it doesn't mean that we can completely avoid the generation of karma. We can't say that still that I am operating at that level. So if I am an arahant, maybe. Mm. But till that, still certain sense of I is available. Mm. So mere superficial theoretical understanding is not enough. So that help us to have kind of a convincing within us that yes, something like this is there. So this is the direction that I need to work towards. But it has to be fully realized. Then only we can say, I am no more operating with ignorance or craving, then no more generation of karma would be there. Mm. So therefore, understanding it theoretically is one side. Fully experiencing that, fully realizing that is another thing. And if we have fully realized it, then we can make this statement. Okay, at that level, there is nobody is there, there is no person is there, there is no person here and there. It's a mere illusion. So you are then operating at that level. Mm. So there is no doubt about it, and you are quite sure about it, and you are an arahant. You can make that lion's roar without any issue. Mm. So that's the main statement made by that arahant, you know, that the Adimutta. Mm. In Adimutta Theragata, so this Adimutta is a young samanera, even though he is an arahant, he being caught by the bandits. So he being, you know, the caught by the bandits,
yeah.
and they are about to kill him. And so he simply says, Tina katta samang dokang, yada panyaya pasati. So I look at this whole world as like mere grassroots, mere pieces of firewood, just empty, no value. So he can say such a beautiful statement, but for us, still we have certain amount of ignorance and craving. So still, even though theoretically I can say yes, your telling is correct, but the sense of I is still operating within the mind. So that's the issue.
So we should conduct our practice with the basis of this theory.
Exactly.
Knowing that this is where we
this
are heading.
We are heading. So ultimate understanding should be like this. But I need to be more humble to accept, even though that hypothetical understanding is there, but my mind not yet reached there. Isn't it?
Yeah.
So even though I am talking like this, say if I am become angry and hit another person, a certain karmic potential still generates. That's a problem.
That makes it clear.
Good. Any other question? Any others you have? Nothing? Okay.
So, but there is one question from our side. Yes, you can raise your hand. You have raised your hand, you can unmute. And then ask your question.
Thank you, Deshan. Thank you, Bhante, for the Dhamma talk. Bhante, I thought of sharing one of my experience and also to bring in a question. The experience is, Bhante, that like what you mentioned, like how said recently, that's what I thought of sharing. Yesterday, I was kind of seeing in my mind that how my mind is directing me towards this one of the, I categorize this as a very bad habit, and then somehow I saw that coming and I was just with it, and eventually I could see that pass away, so I was not part of it yet. So I'm very happy with that. But having said that, Bhante, in the same note, I can now see I'm getting more and more towards the, let's say, association with the Kalyanamitra or good friend or Dhamma friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that part, I wouldn't say that I'm going to the level of addicted, but I have a desire of that. If I have that kind of friends, I like to spend some time and, you know, have some discussions along that line.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always permit, but I can see there's a bit of a craving for me on that. So maybe, I think based on the today's talk, as long as I'm aware of it, as long as I do not kind of become addicted to that, and I'm realistic that it may or may not happen, that's okay, isn't it, Bhante?
Yeah, actually, so that's why the value of this kind of a discussion, maybe listening to Dhamma sermon and association with good friends, because they, such discussion, such association help us to again and again remind that what is the direction. Because otherwise what happens is this worldly winds can take us away. So different conventional worldly winds are there, floods are there, and we also get attached to it, we also feel interested about it. Ultimately we might get lost in it. Now discussion, Kalyana Mitra help us to again withdraw from that and again back in the track. So that's why Buddha encourages this proper good association, Kalyana Mitra association, the association with a good friend. So that continuously in a combined way, so we might help each other, we might give an example to each other, encouragement to each other. So then everybody may be moving towards this proper path. Anyamanyan nissaya. So the one is dependent on the other. There are a group of good people who are like-minded, and they all are trying to attain Nibbana. They have a certain same goal. And sometimes one person may feel disheartened, so the others may help him. Others may give him encouragement. So likewise, the path is very much like intertwined between a group of good people who are like-minded, who are in the same track.
Yes, Bhante, yeah. Thank you for that encouragement. Yes, in fact, like as you mentioned, these Dhamma talks are one of those, and listening to the old ones as well as the Kalyan Mitra. Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you.
All right. So next, I'll give that Ananda. You can unmute and then ask your question, please.
Thank you, Deshan. Bhante, I'm Ananda Manage.
Yeah.
This is some sort of a clarification about this today's Dhamma talk. Thank you very much for your insight, Bhante. My question is this understanding of Bahidha and, you know, internal and external definition. My question straight away is that, for example, the I, if you take I and I conscious, is I is belongs to the external part, or and I conscious is belongs to the internal part. Can you clarify that, Bhante?
Actually, the I is considered as the internal sense base. The sight is considered as the external sense base. And the I consciousness is the product of it, actually. So, I consciousness depends on both. Without any of them, I consciousness can't happen. So, I consciousness basically is the product of I and the sight. Similarly, the ear consciousness is the product of ear and the sound. But anyway, in the typical categorization, ear is considered as internal, sound is considered as external. So, ear is the more sensitive part, which is happening, operating, and the sound is the external part, which is happening. Ultimately, once they comes together, the product, the result, is the ear consciousness, what we call the sota vijnana. But anyway, the sota vijnana alone can't know what is being heard, so that involves the mind consciousness, mano vijnana.
So in other words, so the mano vijnana is extremely internal part, right? Compared to the other five elements.
We can say so, because it's more into the mind. And typically, manovijnana we can consider as the internal. But anyway, interestingly, mind objects sometimes considered as the outside. Now, in this categorization also, sight, sound, smell, taste, tangibles, and the mind objects all considered as outside, external. Even the mind objects are considered as external. We might feel okay.
If I put it this way, Bhante, yeah. Now, if we say I am in a house where the tree is falling in a forest where I cannot hear, so that means it is nothing to do with my conscious, right?
Correct.
So, yeah. So that example is really how we are, you know, sense and. You are not sensing like that. So what we have to do practice is that even though the tree is falling in your neighbor's house or next door, still you can practice it that you are, it is not conscious or concern of yours. That what we have to practice. Is it correct, Bhante?
Yeah. On the other way, we can say only the part what we know produce suffering.
Okay.
So there are many things even right now happening. Outside, maybe people being killed, people may feel certain depressions, certain people might get involved with certain accidents. Many, many things are going on right now. But it doesn't produce any suffering because they are beyond our knowing capacity. These are beyond our experiential capacity. So what we experience ultimately produce suffering, kind of a friction. So in Vipassana, that's why the experiential knowledge is very, very important. So, through the experience, are we experiencing any happiness or unhappiness? So, that can have an impact on us.
Yeah, that is true to some extent that when we are practicing for a long time, like myself, you know, sometimes the disturbances and unnecessary things that we are, even unconsciously we are not hearing or we are not concern about those things, that is a development of our mind, right?
Yeah, we can say so, because mind starts learning how to avoid any engagement. So now, say for example, when we are talking that ditte ditta mattam bhavissati. So merely seeing is there, other than that, nothing is there. So this is not a mere statement, but one should try to experience it. So when you are hearing something, when you are seeing something, are we able to maintain the mind's clarity as it is? Suppose before you experience the sound, assume that your mind was calm and peaceful. Now you are experiencing the sound, still maybe it is calm and peaceful. After you experience the sound, still it is calm and peaceful. Then nothing to worry. Because sound haven't done any kind of a disturbance to the mind. You might have heard it, but mind was able to maintain its clarity. Mind was able to maintain its, untangled nature, nippa-pancha state, no proliferation, no obsessions. So mind was able to maintain its calm state.
So can we call it, in the other words, that is called the practicing sati sampajanya?
Definitely.
Okay.
No, actually the sati,
thank you very much, yeah. Bhante.
Sati sampajanya is one level, we can say. So you are trying to understand the detail, how they are coming and going, arising and passing away. So that is one level. But once you go through it, then you reach that anisita state, independent state. Anisitoja viharati nachakinchiloki upadhyati is a kind of a result one would experience after one may go through the practice. We can't say now you are not in the practice, but at another level.
Thank you very much, Bhante, for your insights.
Yeah, yeah.
Therwan Sarnai.
Therwan Sarnai.
Bhante, that's all the questions so far.
Okay.
Unless anybody else have their questions, please raise their hand and ask that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see John is... John, you can unmute and ask their question.
Thank you, Geshan. Hello, Bhante. Thank you for your teaching.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine.
Good.
So, some of other friends are also here.
Good to hear you and Bhante there. Enjoying these teachings as well. I have been kind of... I'm interested in this concept of self and no self and so forth. So I just wanted to give you this thought and see what you think about it. I'd heard a teacher, Gilf Ronsdal, about, I don't know, 13 years ago, giving a talk about the interpretation or the translation of anatta, and he, Gilf Ronsdal, was saying that the Buddha wouldn't have said no self, that it was more, it should be translated as not self, and that stuck with me, and it's, you know, still something I think about, and since it's today's topic, I thought I would mention, like, I could give you an example is, so the Buddha obtained Nibbana.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had full realization, yes, he had, would never again be reborn again. Once he's dead, that's the end, and you could say there's no self after that when he dies. But while he was still alive, he actually, you know, he had a human body, he had a brain, and he was still a conditioned being that was living in the human realm. You know, he was still a human being. So my question is that wouldn't this actually mean that the Buddha at that point, when he was had realized Nirvana, that he was still, you could say there was a conventional self reality about him, because, you know, he didn't just disappear when he attained Nirvana. He was still partially, you know, a conditioned reality. You could see the Buddha, he had a certain height, he had attributes that were recognizable, he had, you know, a back issue, all these various things. He had a brain, and that brain was conditioned with memories and so forth. Couldn't you say that, the issue would be that maybe that the Buddha didn't really say that there was no self for us humans, but there was not self, because normally we identify so much with ourself as being as if it was, you know, eternal, and even at the Buddha's time, you know, there was the belief that there was a soul that was eternal that we had. So I can understand the Buddha was teaching, you know, this is wrong. You know, there is no eternal self, and there is, we're not, the self that you imagine as so important is really not that at all. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, to a great degree, we're made up of non-self materials, and you can't, you know, it's easier to say that there's no self here than there is a self. You know, it's actually, ultimately, there is no self that's eternal here. You know, that's true, and we suffer because we cling to a sense of self. So, you know, I understand his teaching, but I don't know if he would actually have been saying that there is no self, but rather that there is not self. You know, you see what I'm saying? So that's my question to you, and I wonder what your response would be.
Yeah, so a few things actually I thought of commenting. So one thing is, when an arahant attain Nibbana, so Buddha talks on two categories of Nibbana. The Saupadisesa Nibbana Dhatu and Anupadisesa Nibbana Dhatu. Saupadisesa Nibbana Dhatu means that one has attained the unconditioned, fully realized Nibbana, but still, as you said, certain aggregates still continue. So still you have certain upadhi, still you have certain acquisitions which have come from the past, and they still operate, they still continue, but the complete eradication of the defilements have happened. Tanhakkaya has happened. Ragakkaya, dosakkaya, mohakkaya has happened. Complete eradication of lust, hatred, delusion has happened, but certain aggregates still continue. So, and then when one attain the final parinibbana at the death, so next level is explained as the anupadisesa nibbana, where one attains a nibbana without a remainder. Now no more continuation of the aggregates. All the existing aggregates completely cease, and now one attains the fully fleshed nibbana. So no more existence, no more rebirth, and no more any operation of the any aggregates. So therefore, we can, one level, we can understand that the Nibbana is of two types. At the first level, while living, one attained the Nibbana, but some operating aggregates. At another level, when one dies, one attains Nibbana, which is without a remainder of any aggregates. So that is one thing. And again, Buddha also has mentioned, now say sometimes when in certain suttas, so he says, okay, so when I am talking, when I am preaching, someone can show me, this is the Buddha, this is Samana Gautama, this is Sakyamuni Buddha. So likewise, someone can name me. But actually within me there is no person as such operating. So that is completely penetrated at the Bodhi Mula, during my fully enlightenment. So that conventional basis fully penetrated. So that is one another thing. The other thing is that there is no any barrier or prohibition for the Buddha to use the conventional terminology. So he can use the convention. He can use the conventional terms without any trouble. So he can simply say, okay, I am preaching, okay, I went to the Pindapatha, I taught Dhamma sermon, I advised, or I established a certain monastery, I established a certain Vinaya rule. So still he used the terminology, I, myself, etc. But knowing it is a mere terminology, knowing it is a mere term, a word, a language, something like that. So therefore there is no any trouble in using the conventional terms. But the problem is where we are taking it too far, we are taking it too serious, we are taking it too close, thinking there is something, someone, some essence in those words and someone talking those words, etc., etc. So we have taken the conventional reality too far without knowing its restrictions, without knowing its limitations.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but I think I have a sort of a disagreement, I think, or maybe it's just our thinking is like we're not communicating, maybe it's in the communication, but I just see that it's not just a concept that there is a body, I've got a body,
mm-hmm.
There is a body here.
Right.
If I cling to it and say, this is my body, and, if I get in fights about it, and, I cling to it, then I suffer, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the Buddha is trying to help us learn, is that we shouldn't suffer over this concept of self,
mm-hmm.
And that's what we do. We do suffer, but that's still there is a body here,
mm-hmm.
It is the one, it is the manifestation of a person.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's still room for there being a physical person.
No, not a person, just the body, we can say.
Certain attributes and so forth.
No, actually even...
we call it.
Yeah. Now, for example, in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, so even there, Buddha say, okay, one has attained the Nibbana. One has completely, fully eradicated the Kamasava, Bhavasava, Avijjasava. But still the body is living. Still the body is living. Still alive.
Yeah.
So certain amount of friction is still available through the senses. So because the body may get hungry and you have to defecate, you have to urinate, there may be bodily ailments. So likewise, certain bodily related suffering still there. You can't avoid that even though one is an arahant. So Buddha himself has become sick. Venerable Sariputta has become sick. Venerable Moggallana has become sick. So likewise, still there are, while they are living, the body is operating. But again, we can't say that body is a self also. Body is the body. Body is the five aggregates, mainly the rupa khanda. So they have become merely aggregates. As you said, one is not attached to it anything anymore. One is not grasping it anymore. So they are mere manifestation of the aggregates.
Yes. Yeah, so it becomes a matter of what we call them, but mm-hmm. there's still something there,
Yeah, aggregate, we can say aggregates are there, yes. Mere aggregates are there. So sometimes the term used, Shuddha Sankhara.
They're formed into a human body that speaks and still talks and things, so.
Yes, yes.
So isn't that a person? Couldn't we just say that's a person?
Yeah, we can't say a person. We can say it's a body, we can say the feelings, we can say the perceptions, thoughts, they are there, but we can't attribute a person or self there now.
Yeah, I don't know. And the other thing that I think is interesting is that for so many people, this is a really comforting thing to believe in. And it's, there's still going to be people suffering in the world. We're still going to have wars and all this. But there is, there's a comfort in knowing that we are just aggregates. It's okay. We don't have to, isn't it sort of comforting knowing that, there's nothing to suffer about? We're just aggregates. There's no self here.
But still you suffer. But still you suffer. Because that's a... that's the problem.
I've heard people say that. Yeah. Somehow really, it's just wonderful.
Don't worry, there is no self.
So I don't know. I mean, I think that, but the problem that I find is that I think people avoid their real problems that they have.
That's
as
right.
People.
Yeah.
And they overlook really bad flaws that they have, because sometimes and the suffering that they're causing the world and so forth.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they can take up a belief that, well, there's no self, and
now the point is so that's why the point is that as we already discussed with the Venerable Dhammosada, now we can dogmatically, philosophically try to convince that there is no self, and we can try to profess telling that there is no self, and we can try to convince it. But it is still very superficial. You can't use it as an excuse. Okay, say you kill an animal and you can simply say, okay, there is no self here, and that animal is also a mere convention, there is no self there. So there is no one to be blamed, because there is no self.
Right.
So that is actually a wrong argument, because when you are killing, for example, certain amount of personality is involved. So you being a human being, you being someone, say you feel threatened, you feel fearful from that animal, and you consider it as a threat to you, and now you have anger, you want to kill it, and now you are killing it. And that animal also being frightened during such operation, ultimately he with some resistance, he passed away. So both sides have karmic potential. Because during that action, certain amount of anger involved, certain amount of delusion involved. So lust, hatred, delusion are there. The roots are there. Poisonous roots are there. So anyway, you have manifested as a person and then you killed. So the karmic potential is there. But later you try to convince yourself, okay, there is no self. So during the activity, there isn't participation of an agent. There is a participation of a self. So that's why you were able to do it. Otherwise, you may not do it. That's a kind of a thing that we need to understand. Even though we theoretically say so, till one becomes a fully enlightened, still sense of I is operating. Sense of I is operating. Even one becomes a non-returner, still the sense of I is operating. We can argue, okay, I am not considering any aggregate as a self, but still the sense of I is operating. Asmi mana is operating till one becomes an arahant. So still certain karmic potential is there. That's why we may keep reborn, may even one become a anagami. Still there is a rebirth because certain karmic potential is there. Only the arahant has fully eradicated that.
Yes. Yes, Bhante. And just one other thing. Thank you for staying with me on this this topic. So I think that, for me, I think that a lot of people, and I feel I'm one of the people that needs to keep practicing the experiment of Buddhism. mm-hmm. and to keep doing these meditations to see that there is no self.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like I have some, you know, like I believe that there is not a, you know, I see myself as more of aggregates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can experience that in meditation, you know, that.
Correct.
You know, I'm sensing a less of a self grasping.
Correct.
But at the same time, I think there are many people that need to stay with the sense of that there is a self that has maybe some problems.
Mm-hmm.
And actually there are some good, really good therapies for working with some of the person problems that can be worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And that can just help us with our Buddhist path.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just a little wary of just throwing out the whole sense of self before when we can, you know, when Western therapy has found some ways to loosen up that sense of self and free that
mm-hmm.
sense of self from the wounds from, say, childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to, because I've seen, you know, I know that some people get hung up or have some hang-ups that could be helped by modern therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So that entails considering, well, there is a self here, you know, for the time being, you know, there is a self that's got some defilements that need to be freed up.
Correct.
Understood from a personal, you know, level.
Hmm.
Because I think in the West there's a lot of trauma that is unusual because of Western culture, modern culture, with the isolation and the materialism
mm-hmm.
and you know
the
capitalism and
mm-hmm.
the way society has gone, which
mm-hmm.
is further, you know, it's damaged people.
Mm.
To a degree that that a lot of the suffering is subconscious and it's not even accessible unless you get therapy.
Mm, mm.
So it can be a bit more sticky and difficult to get through in, you know, just doing meditation for,
mm-hmm.
for people that have had some really deep
mm-hmm.
wounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an extreme example would be a psychotic person
mm-hmm.
or a schizophrenic person.
Mm-hmm.
These are people with deep wounds, but that's an extreme where you wouldn't even want them to meditate, you
mm-hmm.
know, because
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't help.
Mm-hmm.
But there are less extreme examples that are still very difficult to work through,
mm-hmm.
yet therapy could help and meditation could be a helpful aid for some people, and eventually, you know, maybe that person could also go on to do more deeper Buddhist practices.
Correct.
But,
correct. Agreed.
Sorry, I don't mean to go on so much, but I just
I can agree with you. Basically, we can't say that immediately everyone is suitable for meditation if in case they are going through, as you said, certain mental issues, childhood trauma, etc. Probably, as you said, therapeutic approaches are very, very useful. At another level, one can introduce to mindfulness such practice, Buddhist practice, that is also helpful. So we need to decide properly.
Yeah.
So at what level I am capable, I am suitable. And the thing is, for the vast majority, we can say it is suitable because it is, we can't say that vast majority are completely having some psychosis or neurosis or whatever. But vast majority may have the capacity to try it, to use it and get the benefits. But
well,
maybe
I don't know about Western people. I think at least people could benefit from some therapy,
yeah,
you know, and some idea that there's a self here that maybe is slightly damaged or hung up in some ways by our, you know, very sick culture that we live in.
You know that the term therapy has come from Theravada.
Yes. You told me that.
So it's a kind of a good association, anyway. A kind of a good association.
Yes, yeah, and,
so you are getting encouragement, good guidance, etc. So it's a kind of all mental development.
And excuse me, Bhante, and also Western therapy has taken from Buddhism. Those. You know, the therapies that I'm speaking of, like internal family systems therapy, has been influenced and taken from Buddhism as well. So they are using mindfulness. And so it's, you know, it's kind of gone back and forth.
The Buddha
was the original, but then Western psychology is helping modern people with unusual sorts of problems that weren't there with the Buddha.
No problem. So that's why, I mean, we are talking of some skillful means. So Buddha also has talked about skillful means, skillful methods. And so it's no harm in make use of those skillful terms, terminologies and the methods, and make use of it and be a good human being. No argument with that.
It's all good.
Exactly.
It can work together.
Exactly.
And that's what I believe is it can all work together.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante, very much.
Okay.
Blessing to you.
Yeah, there was Sanai.
That's all the questions from our side, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay, so we have spent almost 1.5 hours. So I invite Venerable Dhammo Sada to conduct the sharing of merits.
Sai Sam Nohanse. I think it is such good fortune that we are able to gather here and discuss this Dhamma. And so may our relatives rejoice in the merits that we have gained. May all Devas rejoice in the merits that we have gained. May all celestial beings protect the Dhamma exposition and the dispensation of the Buddha for a long time. And may the seeds of Dhamma that we have received today and in the past grow, producing path, fruition, and Nibbana. Now let us chant the traditional Pali verses for the sharing of merits. Ettavata chammehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti sindhya. Ettavata chammehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti sinniya ettavata chammehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti sinniya akasattha cha bhummatta devanaga mahindika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahindika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahindika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam idam vo nyatinam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo idam vo nyatinam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo idam vo nyatinam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu.